for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. You are listening to Love in the 21st Century on every Tuesday from 5 to 6 p.m., hosted tonight by Sky Lee and myself, Tamara Wickma. Love in the 21st Century is a talk show with live call-ins, interviews, and discussions on the philosophical to the practical look of love, from romantic relationships to connections with humanity. One-third dating insights, one-third self-love guide, one-third compassion training. This is a call-in radio show, so feel free to join the conversation by dialing 895-1114. Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by one of Chico's newest restaurants, Rallo's West, at 234 West 3rd Street in the heart of downtown. Rallo's West offers small and large plates, Maryland-style shrimp, blue crab cakes, a wine bar, charcuterie, and artisanal cheeses. Rallo's West is open from 5 till 9 p.m., till 10 on Friday and Saturday. For more information, visit them on Facebook or by calling 636-4468.
All right. All right, and welcome to another edition of Love in the 21st Century. My name is Sky Lee, and I am in the studio with Tamara. Today we will be talking about love and Mother Earth, and today in the studios we have two local environmentalists, Kevin Killian and Jake Davis. They're both here to talk about love of Mother Earth, specifically how they show love for Mother Earth. Both of the, Kevin and Jake are active, very active in the community. And I thought it would have, you know, I was thinking to myself, what is it that I wanted to share with the community as far as how I view love for Mother Earth? And activism has always been a key way of expressing how I feel and how I engage in showing support for various issues. And so if Kevin or Jake, if one of you would like to start by introducing yourselves, that would be great.
Age before beauty? Go ahead, Kevin. I don't know what that means. I don't know which one of us would go first.
All right, yeah. Well, hey, y'all. I'm Kevin Killian. I'm a local born Chico folk.
Woohoo!
Woo! recent graduate at Chico State in Environmental Studies. And I serve on the board of directors for Butte Environmental Council and
Yay.
Hang out with Jake at Chico 350. And yeah, I love the earth.
Yay! And who are you?
Hi, I'm Jake.
Yay!
Jake Davis. How do we get environmentalism? I grew up in Orange County, actually, and there's not a lot of environment down there. I guess it's all environment, but not a lot of green stuff. And so moving up to Chico about like 12 years ago, I just started exploring all the outdoorsy stuff. There's so much outdoorsy stuff here to do. It's beautiful. And, you know, always been a nature lover, but like I said, didn't really have a chance as a youth a lot. And then got up here and just started going crazy and running around in rivers and climbing mountains. And then I've signed a lot of the petitions online from various environmental organizations. And so they asked me to start, me and another lady, to start Chico 350. And so that's what I'm doing now.
Great. And we're going to talk more about 350 as we progress through the show, so you can explain to our audience exactly what 350.org is, what you all are doing, and why you're doing it. Cool. But for the first part of this show, I was hoping you could both let our audience know, what was it that led you towards environmental, you know, like being an environmental activist? Was there an aha moment for you?
Get it.
All right. Yeah, I know my aha moment. It was actually Guy McPherson's talk, which that's sort of a four-letter word around some circles. But
and why do you say that?
The science that he presents, he's sort of a climate researcher, and his general takeaway is that, like, it's too late. We've crossed the tipping points. We're in serious trouble, and now it's about just kind of hold on for the ride. And it's about who do you want to show up as for the last hours, years of Earth.
Yeah, so what was it like hearing that and believing that there's people out there who believe that this is kind of the end all be all?
Yeah, it's heavy. It's really, really heavy.
It sounds really heavy.
Yeah, like for weeks and months afterwards, you just sort of, you're in a daze. Like, oh my God, you can't unlearn sort of the studies and the things that he presented. But it was also, so you can kind of go one of two ways, or you end up going both kind of despair, or it's like the starting gun. And it's the call to action, you know. And so for me, it was like, well, if it's all going down, then I got to try. I got to try. Like, I can't just sit back and let it go down. Like, I got to do whatever I can to. And so to me, there became no greater purpose in life than to try my damnedest.
Yeah, I think that I can agree with that sentiment. If there's action to do, let's do it.
Yeah.
What about you, Kev?
Wow. I'm not sure where I'm at right now. I think I know where I started, though. I had this vague memory. My folks were driving by like a McDonald's, and there's all these folks like standing out there. They were like covered in blood and had a bunch of signs and something about saving the rainforest, and I didn't know what it was.
Wow.
But, you know, I think I watched the Magic School Bus, and like there was a rainforest episode. I was like, yeah, that's a thing. And we pulled over and we didn't get food, and I just hung out with them for a moment. And that was my first brush in with activism. And I was like, wait, these people care, and like there's things I didn't know about, and that's always stuck with me. Thanks for that question. From there, like realizing what is environment, what is nature, and how my relationship to that has really changed over the years. Seeing myself at first as something separate from it, and now questioning and wondering how very connected we are, and how maybe those separations are more illusional than real. Thinking about this, like, what does it mean to do work for oneself, to take care of oneself, if oneself is greater than just this body?
That's a very existential question.
Oh, we're
question.
Going there.
Yeah. When I find that the two are very connected, when we think about the nature of Mother Earth and all that it encompasses, and then who we are in the midst of that. I know for me, it started... was working for AS Recycling. Way back in the day. And I just was floored by the amount of recyclable goods and the amount of waste and what could be done with some things and what could be not done with other things, and just the lack of education that went around the effects that human beings have on our environment. And for me, it was about trying to figure out how I could give back to Mother Earth. You know, if we're looking at her as an entity, as a real life breathing thing, then she deserves respect. And how do we do that? You know, I find that we do that through, she may not have her own voice. So it's kind of our responsibility to be a voice for her in all of those dimensions. So that was the catalyst for me. And then I went to live in India. Which was both enlightened, both like heart filling with wonder and love. And then on the other hand, there was a lot of excessive waste and pollution there that was very heavy for me to experience. So for me, it became a global issue that I felt needed to be kind of looked at. And that's when I also sat on the board of the Butte Environmental Council for several years.
I
got to get on board.
Absolutely.
Literally and figuratively.
Yeah, literally and figuratively.
I got an application for you.
We'll talk. Thanks, Kev.
Do you guys mind just adding in what the Butte Environmental Council is and what they do in the community for anybody that's listening
Good
and that isn't unaware?
Oh, I very much appreciate the chance to rep Butte Environmental Council. It's our local environmental organization, the largest one north of the Bay. We've been around for 40 years. I'm fresh to the board. I've served 3 years and will be beginning my second term this next couple of weeks.
Woo. Yeah, so the Butte Environmental Council advocates for land, air, and water within the north, north state, I guess, as we would say. And they definitely work hand in hand with other organizations here in Chico, like Kids in Creek, the Nature Conservatory, other environmental organizations like that. I think that we're very fortunate to have many agencies within this community that support and love the earth. And so I think we can see that a lot through many of the activities that the community presents. I know the Butte Environmental Council does the Endangered Species Fair every year, which is a really fun and exciting environment for the community. And they bring all of these environmental communities together, and they disseminate information, and they let the kids play and experience all sorts of cool things.
Yeah, big puppet show.
Yes.
Yeah, it's an awesome event.
Yeah. So, was there somebody in your lives that you would say really influenced how you show love for the Mother Earth?
No, I don't think there was. For me, it was an intuitive kind of connection with, like, I think as an only child, and so I spent a lot of time alone. Just walking around outside in the evenings, something about, like, when the sun is going down and, like, the birds are singing their little night songs, and, the crickets start to come out. And
the golden hour.
The golden hour, yeah.
The golden hour.
And into the evening, it's It's like, well, it's happening now. It's like a spiritual time, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think even as like a little kid, just spending all that time walking around outside, there was some recognition of like, wow, there's special.
What about for you, Kevin? Was there somebody that really kind of guided you towards your path?
I like these questions. Like I said at the beginning, I'm kind of like figuring out where I am right now, because where I thought I understood my relationship to Mother Earth a lot better a few years ago, I'm really in flux and really, really questioning it. So it's really developing and changing for me going through this. So
I mean, that's an intriguing question. Yeah. I'm wondering where you saw yourself in the past compared to where you think you may be now, or...
Yeah, well, kind of tagging on to the first question, I had a lot of really strong influences in my young life, exposures to outdoors, and that really helped me like see the beauty in it. So my whole life I've had an awe for the beauty. As I went through schooling, I went through the sustainability studies, which is mostly just learning about how everything is like really messed up. And they have a different class for here's how it's bad for animals, and here's how it's bad for people, and here's how it's like, so
it seems like a lot of negativity.
Yeah, but that kind of is the state of it. It's nothing's pretty. There aren't stats that are up. Like, there's not more trees, there's not more fish. That people are getting sicker all the time. And so, yeah, it's kind of like really bleak. It's like kind of really, really bleak. And so then, like, what do you do with that? And so at first I was convinced that maybe that we could save this, that that with enough willpower and collective energy and everyone coming together and we all do our best shot, that it's all going to work out. I'm really questioning that now. I don't even know. And I used to champion those words so often, and say like, we all got to do this, and rallying the troops, and I still do that. But there's part of me that deeply questions if this is. I don't think some things are redeemable. I don't think some things are going to make it through the next couple centuries. The science says otherwise. So. How do I make peace with that? And how do I relate with something, with this information?
Yeah, that's a little unsettling.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. Yeah, just good word.
We sleep and cry and then try and be ignorant about it, but that doesn't work either. It's just
work.
No good.
So what do you do to try and keep yourself in a positive space so that you can continue to do the work that needs to be done?
Yeah, I think there was a point where I used to try and be positive, but now I'm finding, as I'm maturing with this, to being able to accept things as they are. And sometimes to me they might seem bad, and sometimes to me they might seem good. And I'm trying to look at it from a larger view, from a grander picture, and it's really weird and it's a strange mosaic, but where am I? What piece am I? And what role do I play? And where's my long-term goal? And where's my short-term goal? What am I doing right now in this day to be part of this grand unfolding? And questioning all the time and being able to ride the ups and downs, because I don't think it's going to get any normaler.
How beautifully spoken.
And you know, the question becomes, what is normal, right?
My childhood. That was nice.
Right? I mean, is the state that we're in normal?
For us now, yeah. It's for all of our lives, this has been normal. But yeah, you're right. As far as the long game, we're pretty far off of normal at this point.
The Industrial Revolution was only 150 years ago. The changes, the scale of changes we've been seeing in the environment have never been seen. Like, the changes humans are causing are geologic in nature. We're doing things to the planet that are just enormous. And
what would you say has the most impact on the Earth? Things that humans are doing.
It's just good the whole question. Thing, just industrial civilization, this whole machine that consumes resources and turns them into cheap commodities that get thrown away. The deforestation of land, the acidification of oceans, those two alone are just driving incredible amounts of extinction.
Fossil fuels, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, so, I mean, it sounds like when we talk about environmental activism, oftentimes we're dwelling on the negative. What is it that we can, you know, and that's not really the premise for this show. We tend to like to try and look on the lighter things. So what are some of the things you think that our audiences can do to show love for Mother Earth?
Go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for letting me speak my piece on this.
Absolutely.
But I do want to touch on, like, yeah, there is a dark side of this, but there absolutely is a part of this that gives me so much hope, that I feel so fulfilled being able to work with community and people that want to make things work. This isn't just about, like, the global stuff, but this is interpersonal. This is community. Mm-hmm. And working with community towards something good, it does give me this glimmer of hope. And I question it, but I know that if there is a way, it's through this work, through working with self, working with community to build for something grander.
Yeah, I think we have to do whatever we can. Like, he's right, the science looks really bleak, but there's those unknown unknowns out there, you know. Maybe we'll find some solution, some answer. And I feel like it's my job to keep our head above water long enough for that to appear. So if we can slow, we can't stop climate change at this point. But if we can slow it enough, long enough to find some out, then that's what I'm doing.
And so, what are some ways that you believe that we can slow climate change?
Well, we have to stop burning fossils. Right now, it's not only a matter of stopping the bad, but we have to start doing good. Mm-hmm. Like we have to start undoing what we've already done. There, even if we stopped everything tomorrow, there's enough of it already in the atmosphere, enough greenhouse gases that we're going to be in real trouble. So, so drive your car less. Mm-hmm. You know, ride a bike more. Don't eat meat. Buy food that comes from a few blocks away. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of, like, personal things that we can each do, and get on board with these larger actions that are trying to make big change, national legal change.
Yeah, tying it back to this idea of love for Mother Earth, I've been experimenting with seeing love not as just a feeling, but as an action, as a commitment or a responsibility. And if I love this Earth, if I see it as part of myself, how do I take care of it? Going back to that question, what do I do to take care of it in my local area? What do I do to take care of myself? To be strong enough to be able to do these things.
And so what do some of those look like for you?
It's an important question.
Balance and questioning, like just being okay with the mystery of life and just going for it like every day. And some days are tougher and I'm really tired and don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. But like doing it anyways. Mm-hmm. And like understanding that I don't get this life, but like something about coming together and doing the honest work and putting effort, like sincere love into the work, not attached to the fruits, like
that's
knowing
it.
That it's this strange life thing where, you know, maybe I'll never taste the fruits, but I'm going to work towards it. I'm going to grow these plants, to plant these seeds. And that's my life's work, is to plant those seeds, knowing that I don't know. I feel so called to do it. I don't know how to stop.
Well, and I like what you said about action. I think that even when we look, you know, we talk about self-care and self-love. And so if we are all one, including the Earth, what is it that we need to do to show the Earth love? Just like, what do we need to do to show ourselves love? Mm. So that poses a larger question as far as what does love look like in action for Mother Earth?
Dismantling systems of oppression.
All these
things are just taking from Earth. All these systems. It's just part of the way of life in this Western culture, that it's so geared towards taking from Earth. And I really see we need a radical shift from that. Not just simple change, but like I think as a collective, we need to reevaluate our relationship to Earth. What are we? What are we as beings? What are we doing on this existence? Are we here to be taking from the Earth, taking advantage of each other and all this general mayhem? Or are we here for something more? Like, I think that like at the core of this, we really need to evaluate what are we doing here on Earth?
Mm-hmm.
It's an age-old question.
As I'm listening to you talk, Kevin, it so much reminds me about our relationship with ourselves. Because it all, like, if we're looking at the Earth as a macrocosm of our lives, which, you know, the universe and our microcosm, how often we are misusing ourselves, how much we are putting ourselves out there to produce these things, like, to produce because of a system that requires it of us, to a point that we meaning the, you know, the more global we are, or sick, we are in pain, we are suffering greatly because we're so disconnected from ourselves, disconnected from our neighbors, disconnected from our family members.
So much separation.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So how do we just remind one another to reconnect to that's within us? Yeah. And when you were talking about sort of like the bleak realities that are out there, I think that is all in front of us all the time.
Yeah,
and we have so tuned ourselves out to that. I mean, just walk outside and look how many people are living on the streets, how many people are in pain and suffering, how many people are disabled because of the work that they're doing. This is in our faces all the time, but we have learned to not be able to see it. And I think one of the things that you pointed out, Kevin, about when you were younger, like, you know, your parents did a good job. They built a protective reality for you that it wasn't so obvious, you know, but that this has always been this way. Like, yeah. I mean, for a long time, always is kind of always a generalization, but for the longest time that I can remember. And so really just opening our eyes to reality is love.
Mm-hmm.
That is true love, to open your eyes and say, I love you anyway.
Yay.
I love you in spite of the fact that, like, you're not using a reusable cup.
We're still cool.
Yeah, we're still cool. Because that's the way the conversation continues. That's the way the actions happen, is that people want to participate when they feel like a sense of belonging, when they don't feel judged by, you know, I'm not...
Take them in.
I'm not driving the right car. It's like, it doesn't matter. Like,
whatever.
What matters is that you're here and you're participating, and you never know what action is going to awake someone else. Like that person that was standing out in front of McDonald's, did they know they were going to, like, revolutionize your life and for the rest of your life you're going to be dedicated to activism?
Whoops.
No. And so it's really, it's about that, just doing what you feel called to do, because you never know how much of a difference it's going to make for someone else.
Yay.
Yeah, it's leading with your heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you step into, you know, love as action, I like to look, you know, when I visualize that, it's leading with the heart. It's saying, you know, this is how I feel. This is what I want. And I'm going to show you by projecting whatever is inside my heart onto, you know, whatever is around me. So it's an interesting idea. I really like the idea also of being in a relationship with the planet Earth.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not being external, internal, but being more external. And how is it that you show love to your partner? Or how do you show love to your children? Or how do you show love to your parents? Like that kind of relationship. You know, how do you create a healthy relationship with the Earth?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, what you said earlier, that, like, I am nature. You talked about the Earth as a living being.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we are part of that being, certainly. But we're more like a parasite right now that's kind of killing the host, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, to recognize that, like, this thing sustains us and gives us life, and it is us. And like, that just... It would seem that would inherently breed respect and gratitude and, you know, the desire to do right.
Yeah, I think that's what we would like to believe.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think if we really realized that and remembered that, but we've kind of forgotten that. You know, we kind of have seen ourselves. Naomi Klein in her movie, This Changes Everything, talked about the story that we've sort of written for ourselves. And that we've bought into this idea that, like, we have dominion over the Earth. It's ours to do with what we want, and it's infinite. We'll never run out of anything, and it's and so we've kind of been living by that take story. And I think to change the story, to see that, like, no, we're a part of this perfectly functioning thing, and if we can remember our our correct part, like the part we really play, mm-hmm. We can get back in harmony with it.
Well, and again, it goes back to what Tamara was saying about being disconnected.
I would say, too, that's a very toddler perspective we have about the world. We're like, this is mine, and I get to do what I want with it, and you can't take it away.
Mine.
If you try to take it away, I'm going to scream and yell.
I'm going to throw a temper tantrum.
I'm going to throw a fit about it. So, yeah, we do. Like, as a, you know, the global we have this attitude that we can just do what we want, and how dare someone correct us.
Yeah, yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah. We've just forgotten our natural, you know, place in the whole thing.
Yeah, these I want to comment on that. The sense of separation, this ego that creates, I am this body, I am this thing inside this body, when at a deeper level I am connected to the people around me, I am connected to my neighbors and my community, I'm connected to the earth, but I don't see that, I don't feel that, and I see love as overcoming that separation. Love is the force that breaks down those boundaries, breaks down that separation, and shows us our true unity, our true at-one-ment with each other, with this earth.
That's beautiful.
Yay.
How do we get back to that place of being one, that oneness?
I would say that it's not a getting back to as much as it is a falling away of the story that it isn't so, because it is what is so. Like, it is what actually does allow us to move through those things. So it's our projection and our thoughts and our stories behind what love is and what separation is that keeps us in those separate bubbles. Like, we just need to let those stories fall away and let what's real. Like, I mean, look at somebody, just pick anybody, Lena. Like, if you're, you know, outside, you know, randomly pick somebody to look at and look into their eyes for, you know, more than 30 seconds straight, and you are going to see the deepest form of humanity that you've ever seen. And you didn't have to say a word, and you didn't have to explain anything, and you didn't have to ask them whether or not they believe in the same things as you do. You know, from this intrinsic place that could never be, you know, explained even if you tried to, that you, that there is a sense of humanity and a sense of love there. Mm-hmm. So I think that all the other things that we kind of jumble in our mind and tell us, like, this is what makes sense and we all need to do this, it creates the blocks. That's what we need to let fall away.
That's the divide. Mm-hmm. Keeps us separate.
That is an awesome experience when you do that. We did that at the Dharma Center once for a group, and like you just really genuinely look into someone's eyes for not yours. You're freaking me out. Stop it, Sky.
whoa.
Man, your eyes had a little fire in them. That was crazy. No, it's
that's a good thing.
It's an amazing experience though, yeah. And you see, like, oh, it's you can kind of see yourself in there, like, oh, I see, or I see the divine in you. I see.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. I like how that point illustrated how intense that can be. Whoa. I don't know if y'all caught this on the radio, but there's fireworks in here. No, but like connecting with someone, connecting with Earth, love, like that's powerful. And it's like, whoa, scary, hot, explosive, and whew. So like having reverence for what that is.
I'd like to bring it back to the conversation Adam and I were having last week, when to talk about how to have a relationship with Earth, just begin by being silent somewhere in nature, whether that in nature is in your living room, because remember, you are nature. Like, just being silent with yourself and holding that question, like, what do I feel called to do? Whether that's, you know, in your backyard or out in the wilderness somewhere, we were surrounded by beautiful, amazing places for people to do that. But just really listening, and the answer will be there. Like, we have this idea that the answer must come externally from us. Somebody else must tell us. And you know, sometimes and often people will tell you what to do. People like to do that. So if you want to ask somebody, they will certainly give you an answer. But the best answers come from within. The best answers that you generally want to follow are going to come from listening to yourself. But you need to give yourself space and time to do that. And so starting with a connection with Earth, go outside.
Go outside. Go sit in nature.
Sit in nature. We have a beautiful park. We have the second largest park in the nation in Chico. So
Chico is beautiful.
Go to Bidwell Park. It wants you. It wants you there.
That's like probably the best thing you could do for the Earth.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But spend more time outside.
Yeah, in that contemplation.
Yeah, and so, you know, that brings to mind, you know, there are children in my life who I see hooked to these electronic devices who are resistant to getting outside. You know, it's like once they get out there, they have a really good time, but it's like getting them out there.
It's not their first choice.
Right, it's not their first choice. And for me, that's a vast difference. I know, like when I was a kid, we were always outside. There was no inside. Too. It was all outside.
Yeah. And then Nintendo
I missed
came
that.
Out.
There were we didn't have computers back in the day. No Game Boys.
How'd you live?
Yeah.
We used to throw little apples at each other and climb trees.
The olden days.
We used to put our hands in the dirt. We used to make mud pies, you know?
Yeah.
Less of that.
Like, yeah. There is less exposure for youth to be outdoors. Everything's concrete. Everything's paved. Mm. You go from your door to your car to your school. Mm. You don't ever have to touch. Like, you can go around the lawn if you want.
Mm-hmm. There's a little nature inserted here and there, right? But it's yeah.
I think it goes back to something you brought up before, Kevin, though, about commitment and responsibility, though.
Yes.
Because I think it's easy to go, well, yeah, the kids are doing this, but what are the adults in their life doing?
Right.
You know, like, I'm guilty of that. I work on my computer, so often I'm working on my computer, and to maybe a adolescent or a child mine, it's like, oh, you're just playing on the computer, and I wish I was playing on the computer. Not really, because I'm not really a computer person, but I'm working, and, like, how much are we in front of a screen and then expecting our children to do something different? How much are we saying, go outside and play?
That's a good point.
But we're not playing with them. Yeah. So it's easy to say it, but it's a different to realize that children learn, you know, mostly through modeling.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So really it goes back to that accountability with what we're doing, spending our time.
Our culture is so disconnected. Like you said, like, we're just, it's not our thing anymore. You know, it's all man-made stuff.
Right.
We're surrounded by all the time.
I suppose you could take your computer to the park.
That's a good compromise.
I'm just kidding.
There's no Wi-Fi there.
I'm kidding. I'd like to remind listeners that you are tuned into FM 90.1 KZFR Chico.
Yeah.
Listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. You are tuned into Love in the 21st Century, and we are speaking with Jake Davis and Kevin Killian about environmental activism and showing love for Mother Earth. So far, this has been a very stimulating conversation. I'd like to give you a little hot in here.
AC's down. Oh yeah, thanks for everyone who's like still sticking around. Sorry if I got a little doom and gloomy. I will go back, but you know, I'll keep it tepid from here on out.
That's fine. I mean, again, there's balance, right?
Yeah.
There has to be balance.
Right. I mean, it's like bringing it back to the self. It's like looking at the shadow of yourself, like looking at the other parts of yourself that we often don't want to look at. We're like, you know, I'm good. Like,
yeah, forget about it.
Whatever. I have no issues. And then you get in a relationship and you're like, oh my God, I got so many issues.
Oh, I never dealt with them. Oh.
I swear, where did these come from? These must be your issues because I didn't have any issues that showed up. It's, you know, this dynamic. But it helps us to grow as individuals. And so it's important to bring those things up. It's just important not to get stuck there to the point where you're just in a place of despair and you're bringing everybody else around you down. Like, you must know so that you can feel this, you know, pain.
That doesn't work.
No, I mean, but there's definitely people out there that's, you know, because that they haven't moved to that other place of, well, we can know this and we can do the work. We can do the work we can do.
Yeah, I was there for quite a while after the Guy McPherson talk. It was just like, I was shouting from the rooftops, oh my God, don't you know what's happening? Don't you know what's going on? Look at the science, oh my God. And like, people just don't want to hear it, and it does not make you friends.
Oh yeah, I remember working for the recycling and walking into somebody's office one day to pick up their paper recycling and finding a full plate of food in the recycling bin and just not knowing what to do with that. Except get angry.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And making a little comment, you know, there are kids starving in Africa or something like that. I don't know. I think I got in trouble for that. You'd have to ask Eli. But, yeah, so, I mean, I think it's also about finding productive, healthy, loving ways to show other people how to respect the earth.
Mm. Yeah, modeling. Mm-hmm. And how we were talking about earlier, how in different generations where we're learning from what's being modeled, and we need that now. We need people to figure it out and start like mentoring and showing how do we do this like really quick.
Absolutely. It's like a culture of do-gooders, a culture of people that are caring for the earth. And in Chico, I know, speaking, you know, from being here and living here and growing up here, is that it does have a really strong culture of people that are doing the work and are living the lifestyle that makes a difference in kind of like the grander scheme of things, you know. Carrying around a clean canteen might seem like, you know, just like some other thing that trendy people do, that, you know, to be like, I'm sustainable. But in reality, how many water bottles are being saved by not, you know, by having a clean canteen and not buying water bottles? Like, it might, it's this like subversive cultural thing that it's happening.
Absolutely.
It's definitely happening. And for when you were all sharing your stories of how you came to environmental activism, I was thinking, like, how does, you know, how does that all relate to me? And part of it is that it's definitely been like this kind of subversive cultural thing in an environment that I was growing up in, that all, you know, becoming more conscious of where you're buying your things, carrying around clean canteens, like not like reusing bags and buying secondhand. It's like these things were just like happening, and it just made more sense to me as it was in my environment. And so I think that is a big part of doing your part, is just looking at what other people are doing and maybe just deciding if it's for you or not.
Yeah, I like the idea of obviously doing the things that you can do in your own life, right? To have a less of an impact, but like hearts and minds, kind of like the doing part is needed, and if we all did it, then that'd be awesome. But we're not all doing it, and so I think first we have to reconnect. We have to remember our place, and I think that's sitting outside or walking or like, yeah, you just develop such like a love for, wow, this grand awe. Talk about awe. There's been a lot of studies recently done about awe, and like you just feel this awe when you're confronted with like this majestic mountainscape, you know, and forests, and like, oh, it's so it's so awe. Yeah. So I think that is what gets people to do those other things that you're saying. But first we have to get out of our cubicle and like remember.
Right. I think it's also remembering that not all people can get to those places.
True.
You know, some people, the furthest they're going to be able to go is Bidwell Park. And so for some people, that's even like the furthest concept from their mind. Like, so whatever gets you doing something that's better for yourself and better for the people you're around and better for the world, I'm happy. Whatever it is.
You can do it even on the micro scale. I used to have an apartment where we didn't have any nature around, but we had these flowers that the landlord had planted, and I would go out in the morning and just like lay down on the grass and like look real close at the flowers.
Nice.
And you can just get lost in a flower for like 10 minutes, like, oh my gosh. So even on that micro scale, like, oh, the wonder of nature is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can find beauty wherever you set that intention to find beauty. So I wanted to give you both the opportunity to talk a little bit about 350. Why we're here. So maybe you can let our audience know a little bit about what 530 or
It's tough living in a
350.org. So what it is that you all are about, kind of what the movement's about, where you're going.
Okay.
That would be great.
Yeah. We're trying to save the world, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever.
Kind of a tall order. The Chico, or 350.org, is a big environmental group, like internationally known and whatnot. And our little local branch is just trying to do what we can locally to, first to educate people, to get them to remember where we're at. That's fine. And just to see why this global warming climate change thing is worth their attention. Because there are so many things that call for our attention these days, and like there's a lot of problems in the world, and there's a lot of cool entertainments. And
so 350.org is an organization that is promoting a movement towards education in climate action in climate change.
That's certainly part of it. That's sort of half the mission, I guess, is to illuminate. Do you remember our mission statement by heart?
Oh, and check my tattoo.
Is it on your butt?
Yeah, it's right here.
So certainly like part of it is to just get people to be aware of what's going on. And then the other part of it is to inspire them to act.
Mm-hmm.
I think that when you start to really see where we're at, you're going to want to act, I hope. But yeah, like people feel helpless and they just need, all right, I'm ready to do something. Put me in, coach. Like what can I do?
Yeah.
right? And so you gotta offer them something that they can do.
So what are you all doing locally? Like, what is the 350 doing here in Chico at this time?
So glad you asked. You want to field that one or no? All right. So our first, like we said, part of it is letting people know what's up. Mm-hmm. So our first things that we did as a group were a big march through downtown, mm-hmm. and around the farmers market. And that was sort of like to let people know that we exist and, hey, this is an issue. And there's like a little speech at the end of it. And then the second one was a rally in the city plaza that offered ways people can actually do something. Mm-hmm. So we had all these booths of various vendors and environmental organizations and stuff, and gave people an outlet. Okay, now that we know there's a problem, how do we take action? So that was our first thing, first two things. And then we jumped on the fracking ban, Measure E. Mm-hmm. And that was already kind of an established thing, and then the ball was already moving. So we just kind of helped roll it over the finish line. Mm-hmm. So we certainly helped with that. And then Chico's Climate Action Plan, which back in 2011, I think.
Yes.
You know about that? Yeah, mm-hmm. The city signed this thing with the governor's office saying that we would reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by 25% by the year 2020. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of started slacking on it a little bit, I think. So that was part of our thing, was to get that ball rolling again. And now we're trying to stop oil from coming through Butte County.
Mm, what does that mean?
Well, trains specifically. Mm. Some oil comes through Butte County on the rails, and it comes through the Feather River Canyon along mm-hmm. Highway 70 there, and then it comes right through town by Chico State and by some elementary schools. Yeah, you guys probably know the railroad tracks. They run right by, like, mm-hmm. yeah, a lot of stuff. And there have been some really nasty disasters on the rails in recent years. Trains derailing and either leaking oil or catching fire or sometimes mm-hmm. exploding. And so to sort of jump on it, so there's a national movement that's now going international. I guess a lot of people mm-hmm. in Canada are doing this too, to halt the transport of oil by rail.
Yeah, it sounds like that's pretty dangerous.
Yeah, yeah. If a train were to go over in the Feather River Canyon, like one did 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, that train was only carrying corn, and it all spilled, a lot of it spilled into the river. If it had been oil, it would have gone right into the Lake Oroville, and 23 million people depend on that water, so they'd be out of luck.
Wow.
Kind of a big deal. Yeah,
yeah, it sounds like a big deal.
Yeah, and so, you know, those are sort of more localized issues, mm-hmm. whereas 350 is we're about climate change, and like protecting our water here locally is not going to stop climate change.
Right.
But A, it's important to us. We want drinkable water.
Right.
So for our own immediate future, it's pretty important. But on a larger scale, like, what can we even do here in Chico or Butte County to affect climate change? We're doing the climate action plan. We're trying to reduce mm-hmm. our greenhouse gases. We're trying to get people to recycle and mm-hmm. eat less meat and whatever. Mm-hmm. But we don't have any like fossil fuel infrastructure, and that's really the driving force behind the whole climate change
gotcha.
Thing. So what can we do to mm-hmm. try to limit fossil fuels? Mm-hmm. Encourage bike riding is certainly right. a big part of it.
And Chico's a pretty big bike town, at least once one month out of the year.
Yeah. 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 We're ranked on some national list as being one of the best bike towns in the country.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, it sounds like you all are doing your part to show love through action by taking initiative and standing up and saying, we don't like what is going on to Mother Earth, and it's time for us to create change.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
I just want to express the philosophy that really helps drive a lot of the work I do. It's Ubuntu. It comes from an African philosophy mm-hmm. that roughly translates to "I am because you are." It's it's about relation. I am happy because you are happy. Mm-hmm. I am sad because you are sad. I'm hungry when you are hungry. And understanding that this works for individuals, it works for communities. And the more I see it, this is the planet, and the state of the planet is the state of myself. I see us as really connected, and being able to navigate these very many different levels of self, understanding that like my actions here have a global effect, mm-hmm. And just doing the best good I can in every opportunity, knowing that there's so much more out there.
Yeah, it really raises these existential questions.
Yeah.
And start going pretty deep.
It does. I mean, I think love does that in general. When we talk about love in general, not just for the Mother Earth, but when we talk about it in relationships and spirituality and commitment, it tends to create more questions for us to answer. So I know that I invited both of you to bring in something to read that has some meaning to you. So if you'd like to do that, I would love to hear what you have to share.
Can I jump in really quick and just ask you all to share how people that might have heard you describing 350.org, I think that's what it is, how they can get involved? Do they just go to the website, or is there another means for them to get activated?
First of all, I want to invite anyone who's interested. You want to get involved right now. We've got an advisory committee meeting coming up next Monday at 5 o'clock, and we're going to be talking about oil trains in the Feather River Canyon.
And where's that going to take place?
We'll have the information about that on the Facebook page.
So 350.org has a local page?
So we have an actual web page that's Chico 350. So 350.org is like the big parent organization.
Right.
We are Chico 350 with the little one. Chico, that means
Chico.
So Chico 350.org, and you can contact us or whatever on there. Or there's a Facebook page.
Is there a phone number that people can call that do not do the internet?
Absolutely. Just call me. 530-966-7530.
There you are.
Right on.
Right on, right on. Well, thank you both so much.
Yeah.
So I hope that you all call Jake Davis and try and get yourself involved in 350.org.
Yeah,
do what you can to show love to Mother Earth through joining a local nonprofit organization working towards climate change.
Working towards trying to slow this thing down.
Yeah.
Yep.
Great. Butte Environmental Council also has advocacy meetings. I'm not exactly sure what day of the week, but if you go to beck.net, you can find more information on their calendar. Again, that's www.bec.net for more information on how you can get involved in environmental activism in your community.
So as far as something to read, I was going to do this poem.
Yeah.
Do we have time for it?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Let's hear it. And maybe you can tell us a little bit of background.
Yeah, it's kind of funny background. in seventh grade, Mr. Rulin, my English teacher, I hope you're listening, Mr. Rulin. I'd love to find him. Made us memorize this poem, two poems actually. And at the time, they were just an English assignment, you know. And 25 years later, I still remember word for word. And one of them's pretty long. you did something right there, Mr. Rulin, because they stuck. And turns out he must have been a pretty environmentally conscious guy back then in 1980. all right, so the first one is called "The World Is Too Much with Us," and I think it's Henry Wadsworth Longfellow.
Mm.
I don't know if that's a person. Mm-hmm. I don't know. The world is too much with us, late and soon, getting and spending. We lay waste our powers. Little we see in nature that is ours. We have given our hearts away, a sordid boon. The sea that bears her bosom to the moon. The wind that will be howling at all hours. And are upgathered now like sleeping flowers. For this, for everything, we are out of tune. It moves us not, great God. I'd rather be a pagan suckled to a creed outworn. So might I, standing in this pleasant lee, have glimpses that would make me less forlorn. Catch sight of Proteus rising from the sea, or hear old Triton blow his wreathed horn. Finn.
Wow. That was beautiful.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
Yeah,
Not only is it awesome that you remembered it, but that was very beautiful.
I never really at the time paid attention to the words much. Like, it was just an assignment.
Mm-hmm.
And then, riding over here, I was like, oh my God, that's actually pretty deep. Wow.
Nice. Mm-hmm. What about you, Kev?
Drop the mic.
I could try this.
Okay.
It's from one of my favorite authors, Eric Fromm. It's on The Art of Loving.
It's a beautiful book.
Okay, cool. So you're down.
Oh, I got to read this.
All right. Well, it kind of goes on and doesn't quite end, but I'd like to share this one. It's on the theory of love. The deepest need of man then is the need to overcome his separateness, to leave his prison of aloneness. The absolute failure is to achieve this aim means insanity, because the panic of complete isolation can be overcome only by such a radical withdrawal from the world outside that a feeling of separation disappears, because the world outside from which one is separated has disappeared. Man of all ages and cultures is confronted with the solution of one and the same question, the question of how to overcome separateness, how to achieve union, how to transcend one's own individual life and find at-one-ment. The question is the same for primitive man living in caves, for a nomadic man taking care of his flocks, for the peasant in Egypt, the Phoenician trader, the Roman soldier, the medieval monk, the Japanese samurai, the modern clerk and factory hand. The question is the same, for it springs from the same grounds, the human situation, the condition of human existence. The answers vary. The question can be answered by animal worship, by sacrifice or military conquest, by indulgence in luxury, by aesthetic renunciation, by obsessional work, by artistic creation, by the love of God, and by the love of man. While there are many answers, the record of which is human history, they are nevertheless not innumerable. On the contrary, as soon as one ignores similar differences which belong more to the periphery than to the center, one discovers that there is only a limited number of answers which have been given, only could have been given by man in the various cultures in which he has lived. The history of religion and philosophy is the history of these answers, of their diversity as well as their limitation in number. Wrapping it up, the answer depends to some extent on the degree of the individualization which an individual has reached. In the infant, I-ness has developed, but little yet. He still feels one with his mother, has no feeling of separateness as long as mother is present. Its sense of aloneness is cured by the physical presence of the mother, her breasts, her skin. Only to the degree that the child develops his sense of separateness, his individuality, the physical presence of the mother is not sufficient anymore and does not need to overcome separateness in other ways arise. Lastly, similarly, the human race in its infantile state still feels at one with nature. The soil, the animal, and plants are still man's world. He identifies himself with animals, and this is expressed by the wearing of animal masks, the worship of totem animals, and animal gods. But the more human races emerge from these primary bonds, the more its separateness becomes from the natural world, and more intense becomes the need to find new ways of escaping separateness.
That was lovely. Thank you both, Jake and Kevin, for joining us today on Love in the 21st Century. I really appreciate it, and I'm grateful. Next up, we have Ecotopia, hosted by Stephen and Susan Chudy. They discuss environmental issues with nationally renowned authors and activists. EcoTalk, it's your local link to a global network of folks who know and care about the health of our planet.
Yay.
Thank you all, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks so much, ladies.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the...
Hey guys, Will Durst here to say that the national political conventions are a lot like professional wrestling. Sure, we know what's going to happen, but every 4 years, it's fun to see who's getting slammed into the turnbuckle. Each gathering offers up unique opportunities for mocking and scoffing and taunting purposes, and this Republican meeting in the land of Cleve promises wacky, zany antics all plenty, like a Ringling Brothers circus with all the tent poles chewed through by termites lights in the middle of a nor'easter. Yours truly has made arrangements to be ensconced into both conventions and looks forward to dropping into the upper Midwest just in time for the start of the Humidity Festival. And it is now with great pleasure I share with you the Will Durst packing list for the GOP National Convention in Cleveland. White shoes and belt to fit in with the fashion style known as the full Cleveland. A Trump University alumni ring to flash at security checkpoints. A towel to wipe away the tears when visiting the Lee Atwater exhibit at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Noting that the last two GOP conventions were shortened a day because of hurricanes. An umbrella. A Six Wives Club t-shirt.